Hey, this is Cam Jansen. You're listening to Burble Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Alright, hello everybody. Welcome on back to Burble Shenanigans, your weekly installment of fun, entertainment, and Mike Burble. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well, and by weekly we put a little asterisk next to it, because, lately we've been kind of on the bi-weekly basis.
We've been a little bi-weekly lately. Things have been busy. What do you want from us?
Yep.
It's a free show, damn it. What do you guys want from us?
I mean, if you want to give us money, I mean, we're all for that. We'll keep yelling at you for that. But
you know, the end of the summer, the beginning of the fall here has been a little busy. This week was no different, and I had a hard time getting the episode up. But you know what? I hope you guys enjoyed Bob Levy last week. I'm sure maybe Bob was so intense that maybe they couldn't handle two episodes in 2 weeks.
That is true. I mean, it took us 2 weeks just to get all the bleeps in there.
Right, exactly. But anyway, if you're just tuning in, we are a just about weekly program. This is episode 260, Mike. 260. And we keep climbing our way up to, I guess the next milestone would be 300, if you will. But we got big plans for that. Mike's been planning all year long. So it's going to be huge.
I just plan to melt ice that day. Scott, I got to be honest. I'm not even going to pick up the phone. I'm just going to go to my sink, melt some ice, and go, that was a fun day. And go, oh, crap, I missed 4 calls from Scott.
But if you're tuning in for the first time, we generally, at least for the last couple of years, we always have an interesting guest on. And the last couple of weeks have been no different, and neither is today. So happy to be back. Happy to be back. Burlo, I think I'm dying.
Oh, it's finally mine. Show finally came to me.
You got the keys to the jalopy.
I waited 5 years for this moment.
I think I'm dying.
What's wrong, buddy?
Ankle update. Ankle update.
Grapefruit in the south.
So you know, Mike, but the listeners might not know. I injured my ankle pretty damn bad about 7 weeks ago, and I updated you guys last time. Not doing it was, you know, a lot of swelling still and whatnot. So I was told I had to go get an MRI. I did the whole MRI thing, which is luckily it wasn't like it wasn't one of the ones. It was I was able to just kind of stick my leg in, so I wasn't like in the covered ones, because I did one of those when I was younger, and I was not a fan. And I think the older I'm getting, the more claustrophobic I'm getting. You ever had an MRI?
I have. None has come to recollection, no.
They're not enjoyable, man. A lot of loud noises, close spaces, sitting still for 25-30 minutes. It's not fun. Not fun at all.
It takes that long to get a picture?
Yep. So they're like, okay, come on in. Take anything metal off, any phone, wallet keys, get yourself comfortable. Do you want a blanket? Because it's going to be about 25-30 minutes in there. I was like, ugh, all right. And so long story short, I go to the physical therapy and the results come in. And I have got 3 tears in my ankle and some kind of weird degenerative bone injury, like where the bottom of my ankle bone is kind of like spurring or kind of crumbling.
I told you not to sign that Redskins contract.
So
I told you that the second you do that, so body parts just explode.
So basically, not what I'm saying is that me and Saquon Barkley are basically similar athletes.
I was going to ask you, were you in the same room with him when it was happening?
What's up, Saquon?
26 for life!
They probably couldn't fit his quads into the MRI machine. But yeah.
We had to get a drill just to make a bigger hole for you, Saquon.
That guy, if anybody's... you have to go Google the body issue. The sport, what is sport? No, ESPN, the body issue.
ESPN, the magazine.
And Saquon Barkley did it. And his quads are so big that it looks like he has no butt. Like his quad, it looks like he has four hamstrings.
Yeah. You sent me the picture, and I was just, it looked like his muscle was like three times a normal human being could ever have on their body.
Right. So and, big that it made him look misproportioned.
Yeah. Like literally, I thought, the island of Dr. Moreau, and they combined him with some kind of horse feet, you know, kind of like they were going to make him a centaur, but they just said, oh, screw it. We'll just give him two legs. And that's what they ended up.
I would love to be half Saquon, half Scott. That would be awesome. I've had Saquon bottom.
You'd be walking around. It'd be 10 degrees in New Jersey. You'd still be out there in shorts.
Yeah.
Stop.
Absolutely. But so, yeah. Ankle's all busted up, so basically this Thursday coming up, I have to go see the – next I got to go see the orthopedic to see if I need surgery or not, which is no, I'm not looking forward to. And I also will not take one opinion. I will take a couple to see if there's any way around this. But that's one reason I think I'm dying.
So is it like a, hey, we got to knock you out kind of surgery?
Probably.
Or is it – like just local anesthesia cut into the thing?
I would assume, I mean, I haven't talked to him yet, but I assume it would be a knockout kind of thing, considering they have to go in and fix a bunch of ligaments. I can't imagine being up for that, but I don't know. I don't know.
You can live podcast if they keep you up.
Hey, bro.
What's going on, Scotty? What's that drilling sound I hear in the back?
Is that Obi again? How did he get in the emergency room? I brought him.
Kind of climb on your story. If you recall the former boss that I had that I wasn't a huge fan of back in Jersey.
Yeah.
And we talked about it on the show before. So he broke his leg in mm-hmm. India.
Okay.
And he broke it like nasty for what I understand, like real like compound and everything.
Yeah.
And the reason I asked, is it like a knockout kind of surgery, was they were literally putting a rod into his leg. And he was awake during it. He's like, he's saying he could hear like them chiseling and like literally getting a hammer and knocking the rod into his body. So
lovely. I'm hoping whatever it is a knockout surgery because I don't really want to be up for anything. So, but yeah.
Worst case, just go to a local brewery, tie down a couple of them, and you walk into surgery.
So your advice is to walk into surgery hammered.
I mean, that'd be feel-good story for me. I mean, what's up, Doc? I love you. Yeah. You get in there, Doc. I love you, man.
All right. So that's Burley's advice.
You know, get some White Castle to come into the room.
All right. Well,
be all good.
So... I guess we'll have another ankle update next week. But so that is what it is. That's been lingering for a while. And then the other day I'm like scratching my neck. And my neck's feeling real itchy. And I don't know what the hell is going on. I think it's just like, you know, irritated from shaving or whatnot. And then in the morning comes and I'm like, man, my neck feels so itchy and like raw. And I look up, and I don't know if you can see it on video here. Well, you can't really see it too good, but So I got this like crazy rash, like going from basically the bottom of my chin, like straight down my neck, like kind of coming all the way to my collarbone, and it's real red and it's real raw, and so that's been going on. So I don't know if I have the HIV. I don't know if what's going on, but. I've been rubbing Benadryl lotion on it constantly to try to make it go away, but I feel like I have a leather neck now. Now it feels real dried out, like if I snap my head hard enough, it's just going to like tear in half.
I mean, did you change anything, like laundry detergent or
I went through the whole gamut. Yeah, like I know, like different deodorant, no different detergent. The only thing I could think of is I remember I had like, because there's like a little skib up here, and I remember I had like a pimple under my chin while I was shaving. I remember like popping it. And then maybe I shaved it. Maybe what I think might have happened is, you know, like a dirty razor or the razor head had some, and I shaved it and it got into like my bloodstream, and it's some kind of like dermatitis. Because if I look in the mirror, it's like almost like a straight line going down from that mark, and it kind of spreads down to the bottom. So that's my theory on what it is, like some kind of little skin infection from like shaving or something. But I don't know, man. It could be anything.
My thing is, you're going to be the next Killer Croc in the next Batman movie. That's my thought process.
I'm just going to consistently evolve till I turn into a crocodile.
Yes, and eat people. That's what I suspected about you when I first met you, and I'm sticking by it. I'm doubling down on that bet.
Well, the eating people part is fine. That's the easy part of it all. You know, I got that locked, but as far as getting rid of this rash, I would like to get rid of this rash because it's very like, I don't know, you got something growing on your neck. You're kind of very self-conscious of it while you're talking to people and things like that. It's not fun. So, if I'm not here next week, guys, I hope you enjoyed episode 260.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I mean, even though I don't really know how to get the next episode up to the internet, so
we might
go very bi-weekly, if you know what I mean.
So 259 might be it. That might have been the
That's
end.
Where we finally ended. It's like, you know what? I could Google this, but nah. I'm perfectly fine at ending it where it is. Well, perfect as always.
So hopefully I don't die. But guys, if not, it's been a solid run, Mike. I enjoyed my time here. Speaking of,
you plan to have the lake life funeral where they just float you into the middle of the lake and just burn your body?
Just let the fish eat me?
Yeah,
that's all right. I mean, there's worse ways to go, I guess. I don't know. It can't be that bad. But yeah, I mean, I guess I could be buried in the lake, and I don't know, people could like, you know, maybe they could like plant a little monument in the lake or something like that, like sticking out of the
lake. Or every year they just fish you out to celebrate you and then throw you back in.
Oh, so I just decay more each year.
Yeah.
And what's ever left, they drag me out and kind of, I don't know, put me on a table.
It's like a lake life tradition where it's just been like, all right, let's get old man Brendan out of the water again. Daddy, he stunk worse than usual last year. I don't care. It's lake life tradition.
I wonder how long it would take a body to fully decompose in the lake. I bet you it would be quicker than you think because there's so many fish and stuff. I bet you they eat me quite quickly. Not if I have this rash, though.
Yeah, the fish would be like, ew.
And they might stay away.
I have protocols here, man. He's, come on. Ew.
He looks exactly the same.
It'd be great if you were just a wet, soggy skeleton with like a fully rashed out neck. like 20 years from now, it's like, it still looks the same. What the hell did he have?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I guess I could go like that. That's not a bad way to go. But speaking of death, I did a pretty interesting show the other night. I did a show at a I didn't know this going in, but it just said it was sponsored by the Women's Club of something something in Toms River, New Jersey. And I'm like, okay, I'm hosting. And I get there, and I'm driving down, and I'm noticing it's like an over 55 community. I see, put it this way, I saw three bingo signs on the way in. Three bingos for three different nights.
That really brings in the 21-year-olds to those shows, but continue.
Why do old people love bingo so much? Like, I feel like once you start playing bingo, you're like, you're kind of admitting, like, all right, I'm on my way out. Like, I'm giving up. Bingo is my thing now.
I think it's like the least, it's like the most comparable to gambling where you're not really losing a ton of money. Right. You know, it's like the most gain for your gamble.
Oh, okay. All right. It's a good theory. So I see the three, and I'm like, oh, boy. And I pull up to the place, and I'm like, I was there a little early, so I was like, let's pull up and just see where it is so I know where it is, and then we can go drive around or whatever. And I pull up, and I just see all the people getting out of their cars, and I don't think I saw a person under 70 years old. White hair, blue hairs, everywhere. Wheelchairs, canes, you name it. You name it.
I smell comedy. Continue.
So right away, I'm like, oh, boy. Bombs away. Here we go. So then I drive down the street to kind of – I still have like a half hour to kill. And then I get hit with the bubble guts. And I was pulling all the way down the street. And the only thing I pulled into was a church parking lot. This big, massive, like – church of something something, and I'm like, I gotta go. I got like 48 seconds to find a bathroom or it's going to be a mess. Like, we're gonna really have a situation on our hand. So I run into the church. Now, this is a first. I don't think I've ever, like, I've had a lot of times where I gotta go and I found places to go, but I don't think I've ever, like, ran into a church before. So I go in, and, like, mass is going on. It's like, oh. And, like, there's, like, a lady at the front, like, looking at me. And I'm, like, she's clearly looking for a bathroom. And the bathroom happened to be, like, right next to the church, like, where the actual mass was going on. And I'm sitting there. Okay. And I can't exactly tell you. It was a very silent occasion. So it was very loud, very embarrassing. I guarantee someone in the back row heard what was going on there. But
the devil is rising. I can hear him. Stay down there, devil. This is the house of the Lord.
So
white fluffy clouds.
So I did my thing, headed back towards the show, and walk in. And again, it was about 200 just very old people. And generally, you don't, when you see that, you don't go like, this is going to be a great night of comedy. Sorry, old people. I know you're listening. I know you guys are big podcast consumers, but generally you're not the biggest of laughers sometimes.
I guess it depends, because there's some that theorize, like, the people in the older age have gone through so much stuff, they'll just laugh at a ton of things. I mean, I guess it depends on your feeling going into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't a great sign that, like, we couldn't start the show right on time because everybody was getting their ice cream, which was Dixie cups being handed to every person. They were like, I didn't get my ice cream. And, like, they're handing them out and serving them to everyone, kind of like a nursing home.
Be great. Shut up! Where's my Rocky Road? So, I went to Vietnam for my Rocky Road.
So everyone gets their ice cream, and I'm hosting. So I just go up, and I'm like, all right, here we go. And I just basically lead off with about 6-7 old jokes, and they loved it instantly. So it's pretty good. But I'm sitting there, and immediately there's this woman just constantly calling out. I'm like, you all right? I'm like, what's your name? She's like, Doris. I'm like, okay, hi, Doris, whatever. I'm like, all right, I'm going through some bits, and then I'm like, hey, what do you guys want to talk about? What do you want to talk about? I'm just playing with them, and she's like, sex! I'm like, whoa, okay. Okay, dirty Doris in the house, everybody. I'm going on later. I'm going through a bit about anniversaries and things like that and getting cheated on. She yells out, you're my type of guy. I'm like, oh, yeah? I'm like, why? Because you like pale, broke, white dudes? And she's like, no, because you're alive.
So Doris was aiming for your bit, huh?
Doris was killing it with one-liners. Doris, if she could get up, I'm not sure she could get up, but she kind of probably could have opened the show. She had people rolling around her. Like, they were really into it. Then I'm making fun of this one guy in the crowd. He's like looking like kind of past me, and he's the first guy in the audience, and he's like looking past me but commenting on things, like, you know, I'd say something and be like, yeah, I know, you know, stuff like that, but he's like looking behind me, and then, of course, I'm like, sir, what are you looking at? And then he's like, just like, ha ha ha, like laughing. I'm like, are you looking like at the back of the stage? What's going on? And then a woman at his table goes, Well, he can't see. I'm like, oh. So
do you think he thought you were ribbing at him and, oh, what you looking at, sir? Ah, that's a good one. I hear that all the time.
No, I think he was like being cool about it, the fact that he's probably blind. And I'm the big idiot up there going, "Walk! What are you looking at, sir? Why can't you see me, sir?" So yeah, that was a little awkward. And but all in all, show went well. They were very appreciative. And it just goes to show you, like, you never know. Sometimes audiences look like they're going to be terrible, and they're awesome. And then sometimes you think they're going to be awesome, and they're not. So it was just another adventure in comedy.
I just want to hear more about the comedy stylings of Doris.
Oh, well, Doris was great, man. If you want to go down to Tom's River, she's probably... I feel like she's a card-carrying member of that retirement community down there.
All right, coming to the stage. What's that? We don't have a wheelchair ramp? Never mind.
Staying below the stage. Doris. Dirty Doris, everybody. Dirty... Doris. But it was a good show. It was a good show. It was fun to get up there. It was better than my last show, which was interesting. But, you know, like six people in a room staring at you with no expressions on their face, that kind of show. That was fun.
Maybe they were all blind. Maybe they were just like that other old guy.
Maybe that's my audience. Maybe that's my wheelhouse. People who can't see or people who can't see hear. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Today, Stevie Wonder comedian is Scott Brennan.
Woo! Give it up for him. Yay! Hey, what's he look like?
Hey, everyone! What's everyone looking at?
Do you think that... I think blind would have to be the worst sense to lose. That's got to be the worst. I would... I think I'd rather lose my hearing, smelling, and taste before I lost my sight.
Well, my dad lost the taste, and that was depressing for him. Yeah, like, you know that. I don't think anybody's super worried about losing feel.
I think that would bother you a lot more than you think. You know, like, think about not being able to like feel a sensation of anything, or feel like the comfort of a blanket, the embrace of a woman, Berlew. You couldn't feel any of it.
Well, for a while, I couldn't feel that anyway, but I digress.
The fur of a dog. See?
Scott, I might have to take the rest of the night off. That one hurt. That one.
Right.
That so, one cut me.
I think losing your sight just must change just everything in your life, man. It must just change. You know, knock on wood, that never happens to anybody. You know, but it's got to be just so life-altering that it completely changes everything you do.
I mean, obviously, I mean, you lose all ability to drive. I don't want to say you lose all ability to travel, because obviously you can walk with a cane or a dog or something like that. But you lose everything that... I mean, people, you have to worry about people describing to you what's going on out there for the most part.
Yeah, yeah. And if they're, you know, you got friends like you, I feel like you'd be pulling pranks on me the whole time.
Oh, yeah, you know it's got it.
Keep going. No. Keep
We're
going.
We're way far away from the lake, Scott. Don't worry. Keep going.
Got him again.
You again, Scotty. Scotty Wet Blind. That's what I call you, Scotty Wet Blind.
I think these self-driving cars are going to get so good that blind people will be able to drive them.
I mean, would it still be considered driving if you're not driving?
I mean, if it's self-driving, I guess, you know, it's more of a transportation car, but I don't know. I guess so. But I mean, they're probably already safer than normal cars, so... I mean, if you got to get somewhere, why not just jump in one of those?
I'm just worried about, you know, one of these days a hacker is going to get in there, and you know, some effed up stuff is going to happen after that.
Yeah, but I mean, we got people who just take trucks and drive them through people these days. So it's not much different than a.
Well, yeah, there is, because that guy got into one vehicle. A programmer can get into every vehicle.
Oh, like an attack of multiple cars, like a fleet.
I mean,
are you giving away what you've been working on?
No, I'm not that good. I'm a good programmer. It's a whole getting in there. It's a whole different part of it. But, yeah, I could, even not even like a guy trying to like mass domination. I could just see like the kind of like a Doogie Howser kind of kid, like the old 80s hackers movies. And all, ha, I got it to the mainframe. Ha, let's do it. You just see like 800 cars doing spin outs on the LA highway for no good reason.
But I mean, how much more dangerous is it than driving next to someone who's on their phone, who's putting on their makeup, who's eating? I mean, a self-driving car might be pretty safe.
It all depends on, I mean, being a programmer, literally, if you do not think of every what if statement, you can get into a little hair right there.
If you think definitely of how crazy driving actually is, I mean, we're jumping into something going 80 miles an hour, inches away from each other, all basically accepting that the person in front of us knows what they're doing, the person to the left of us knows what we're doing, that we're all going to stomp at these lights and that we're all going to make rights on certain stuff. It's pretty crazy to think that we can all do that. But meanwhile, we can't like people can't like do anything for themselves, but we can jump in a car and kind of get information and get to where we got to go at very dangerous speeds and very close to each other. It's pretty phenomenal, actually.
See, that's kind of why I figure we're never going to get that flying car. Yeah. They're scared enough of us on the ground, basically coming inches away from killing each other, to the fact that somebody's going to be hundreds of feet in the air and then do road raging where you just crash somebody into your home, you know?
I don't know. Maybe we'll see the flying car one day.
I can't see it, because the second you get a mechanical failure, you're flopping right to the ground.
What if you have a very safe ejection seat that works automatically if that happens?
Well, that's fine for you, but the whole person walking down the street, your friend, the blind person who's just walking with his cane going, what's that weird sound I'm hearing?
As long as I'm safe. Just adds to his life. As long as I'm safe, I don't care.
Well, who says that you had enough money to get the nice projectile car?
What are you talking about, dude? This podcast is going to pay for our flying cars. We're going to be killing it.
Is that our new sponsor, Johnny's Flying Cars?
Yeah, Johnny from Johnny from the Lake over here has a flying car company. I invested.
It's Johnny from the Lake here for Denville's Johnny Flying Cars. Woo-wee, man. We got fast cars. We got helicopters. We got those weird ones with like 8 wings on it. You remember the 20s? I sure do. Woo-ha!
Well, but it's time to get to our guest here. I'm pretty excited. Longtime New Jersey Devil, St. Louis Blue, and one hell of a fighter. A type of hockey player that you don't see too much anymore. The game is kind of leaned towards phasing out. Somewhat of a goon, hard worker, fourth line kind of guy. The one and only Cam Jansen is going to join us.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah, he was one of the bigger goons of the game. You know? I mean, he did his job well. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But, yeah, it's kind of a dying art using that anymore.
Yeah. Well, time for the surprise part of the show, where we've arranged for you and Cam to go one-on-one.
Well, I mean, I can't skate, so he's got kind of 2 advantages on me now.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. Only 2.
Yeah, everything else I think I got him on.
Yeah.
The whole fighting and the whole skating thing. If we get past that, he's in trouble.
Oh, all right. Well, I guess without further ado, let's get the one and only Cam Jansen on the line.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, Cam.
What up? I see the New Jersey. You guys from Jersey?
That's it. Yeah. I'm calling you from Jersey.
Oh, I know.
That's part of the reason I'm excited to get you on, man. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I watched you fight and beat up Rangers and things like that. It's a very prideful moment for me.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. Right on. I loved it up there, man. It was fun. The people treated me great. And I had a blast up there with all kinds of different people, man. We did it up. It was fun. Yeah. Maybe a little too much.
I mean, I guess I can jump right into the first thing I think of, at least in as far as like modern memories. I guess it's not even that modern anymore. You're going back 7 years, but the fight at the puck drop with the three fights going on at once. That was, for a fan, one of the coolest things I've seen. Because I mean, one, it just like reestablished that rivalry. Like, oh my god, like these guys are ready. But two, that had to be one of the, you know, for you guys to experience, that had to be one of the coolest things.
Yeah, you know what? It was interesting. We people always think that there was like a big background in history leading up to it. Like we all right. talked, and they no, it just what happens is you're sitting in the locker room, you're doing your thing, and it gets real quiet. Right when the coach is about to come in, about 5 minutes left, you see the timer on the wall. The coach comes in and he starts talking, gives a little speech, and then he gives a lineup. And then we knew that the fourth thing he was dressing, the fourth line, which he really didn't do, was Pete DeBoer. We had a really good team. You know, we went to Stanley Cup final that year.
Yep.
But he dressed us. We're like, okay. I'm like, all right, well, time to take care of some business. So me and Eric Bolton and Ryan Carter,
yep.
we're looking at each other like, all right, let's go do something. I'm gonna, you know what, who are they dressing? Because I'm gonna try to fight Trusty. Or Rupper, they had Michael Rupp over there too. So we kind of just talked to each other, and then we realized that they dressed those guys. And so at the draw, we're just like, "You want to do it? You want to do it?" And Rupper says no to me, and so I cruise over to the other side, and I go, "Trusty, let's go." He's like, "Ah, oh, okay, fine." And then Bolts went over, and we all fought, and it was, it was a blast. But I will say this: Marty didn't like it. Marty Brodeur didn't like it.
All right,
just think about it. He's in warm-ups. He's doing his thing. He's ready to rock. He's playing against the Rangers. You know, it's like, you know, they were good. We were good. We were competing. And then we have shenanigans going on for another 25 minutes at least. You got to get the blood off the ice. So he's like, how about don't do that again? Because I got, you know, you get cold and things like that. But overall, it was pretty funny. And, it will never happen again, put it that way.
I watched it, you know, leading, you know, knowing that when we confirmed the interview, I watched it again today, and it's like the hair stood up on my arm. Like, I'm like, this is like just the crowd, like the response to it. And I remember the text messages going around between me and my Devils friends and Ranger friends. It's just a really unique thing to happen. And and you were the last one down.
Oh, yeah, we didn't. Our fight wasn't that great. Plus, he's kind of hard to deal with. He's real strong, and he's very technical. So if he doesn't want you to hit him, he knows how to do that. And I'm the same way as well. But it was this weird, just tying each other. But it was still cool. But again, you probably won't ever see that again. No, you know, no, no, it's probably never going to happen again. There might be a fight off the draw here and there. But you'll never see that again. And it is what it is. But you can always cherish it. It's on YouTube, and you can just check out, you know, don't get me wrong. You're chilling at night and you can't go to bed. Like, I'm going on YouTube and watching hockey fights for about 45 minutes. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you have, like, you know how you say you went up to Prust and whatever, and, like, the guys that you fight repeatedly, the guys that were out there, the goons, if you will, or the guys there to kind of protect and stuff, do you guys have a camaraderie with each other, even though you're on opposite teams, like, where you're able to say, okay, let's do this? Like, is it an unspoken thing, or do you guys actually, do you enjoy fighting each other?
Well, everybody's different, but as far as being buddies on the ice and off the ice, whether it looks like it or not, I was cool with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple guys I didn't like. Eager pissed me off. Ben Eager, he's playing for Chicago at the time. But when you get to know him, because I never got to really know him, but after hockey, like, you're like, oh, he's a cool cat. Met him a couple times and this and that. But on the ice, I was just, he kind of drove me nuts here and there.
Right.
And he got to me a little bit. But everybody else, like, you guys you square off with, all the big boys, like, you know, you look at each other in the penalty box and you wink at each other. And it's a job, and you do what you do. I like doing it. Like, a lot of guys, though, that played were big, and they're forced into it. Where I kind of just, I was wild and crazy as a kid.
Yeah.
And I kind of just, I liked that role, and I liked to hit. And that was just me. That was my personality, and I was able to kind of let it out with hockey.
and I liked the fight. Now, was it stressful? God damn right it was.
Yeah.
Big time. You know, leading up to everything, like, you're just thinking about it. You're like, God, is this dude going to knock me? Is he going to knock me out in front of my parents tonight? You know, like, yeah, it's just like, damn, yeah. Dude, no, it's the real deal. Am I going to be drinking out of a straw for the next, you know, 6 to 8 weeks? Like, it's real. And, but when you're out there, it's like, you know what? Screw it. Let's go, baby. I don't care. I'm putting on a show.
I mean, I was even like watching a video of one of the promotion ones that they were talking to you, and you were saying, like, even at a young age watching hockey in St. Louis, how the fights more intrigued you than even like the goal scores. Was that naturally in your blood, or just the shock of seeing it live where you're like, oh, I can get into that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was my personality. Like, I'm a wild kid. I was a physical kid. Like, I wanted, like, I'm aggressive, you know, like, I've chilled out now and I know how to, like, turn it off, but I had that aggression and I liked that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching, you know, Brett Hall got you into everything. Okay. Like, Brett Hall got everybody into the Blues at the time, growing up when you're my age, growing up in the late 80s, early 90s. Holly got you into hockey. But then once you got into it, because we didn't know hockey, my parents never played hockey. Hockey wasn't a big thing in St. Louis at the time, but the Blues were. Mm-hmm. And Holy was. Brett Hall was.
Yeah.
And then my dad would take me to games, and I'd look at it like, damn, there's a lot of stuff going on out here as a kid. And then all of a sudden you see, you know, Twister, Tony Twist, go out there and beat the piss out of somebody. He goes to the box, he takes off his shirt, you know, all the girls are going crazy. Like, you're like, damn, I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
No, honestly, and I'm like, damn, I want to get into this. My dad got me into hockey, and that's how it went. And it's just, I firsthand got addicted to it, not because of the sport necessarily, but because of the Blues, and then watching Twister and Chaser and those guys.
Yeah.
It was just so entertaining, and I've never seen anything like it. And you'd still go to the Cardinals games. My dad would take me in the whole time, and nothing gets – we all love the Cardinals here. God, they're huge. But as a kid, I didn't get into baseball like I did when I was going to hockey games, mm-hmm. because of all that craziness that I just loved.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, when you're coming up playing hockey, you know, like as a kid or even in like – whatever you call it, like club team and things like that. When are you like actually allowed to start like to actually have a fight? And what was your, do you remember the first time you fought?
Well, you know, I never played hockey. I started at a late age. Like, so I started really playing at 10 years old.
Right.
But I played roar high, and that's really late, dude. Mm-hmm. Especially from like Eureka, Missouri, which hockey's not big. And
yeah.
It's hard to get into as it is. Uh-huh. And you're starting late and you just got to kind of figure it out. But I had played roller hockey, and I just got good at it. And I was I played every other sport. You know, I ran track, I played football, everything. So I became an athlete, and then I just got into hockey, and I'm like, okay, I can figure this out. But I always wanted to hit, and I always played. My dad would coach me at a young age playing house league, and I'd always play up to my brother's age, which was 2 years older. So I was always able to hit, and I'd love to show off in front of my brother's buddies that I was tougher than them.
Right.
And 2 years is a big gap when you're young. And I'd go out there and I'd want to show off and hit guys and be that guy. And I just got into it. Then you got attention. And I'm like, damn, that's cool. But the first fight I've ever gotten into, God, probably one of those games. But then when you're allowed to fight at the age, I think I was 15, 16, playing St. Louis in St. Louis for the junior, the St. Louis Sting Junior A, mm-hmm. North American Hockey League. Then I started fighting like 30 times a year, and you're allowed to do it. Fighting 21-year-olds, you know.
Now, were your coaches like all thumbs up, yep, go do your enforcer thing, or any of them like, no, I want to see some stick work out there?
No one ever had to tell me to do anything. They knew how I was. I think that there was a couple times when I was younger, I had great coaches. I think when I played for the Sting, when I was pretty reckless and I was able to fight because it was juniors and I was young and I was playing in front of my buddies in high school because I was playing at home. And Rick Zombo actually got fired as a coach. And then we went through like five different coaches and this and that and the other. And I just think, damn, if Rick would have just – and I like him. He's a friend of mine. He's a Blues alumni. So if he was still there and he would have – been my coach, he would have grabbed me and be like, okay, this is how you do it. But I didn't really have that then throughout that year, and I was just a maniac, And then the Windsor Spitfires drafted me in the OHL, and I went up there, and they molded me into what I needed to be, you know, talking with scouts, and then you're on the stage. And so I kind of had a little setback, I guess, but I did learn how to be, learn how to fight and be fearless, and that got me to where I needed to go.
Now, I look at your career, and you had a pretty long career, you know, 15, 16 years, you know, different places. What is it like to, you know, sit there and you see the game now, how the enforcer roles have kind of faded away in some aspects, and, you know, the game's really changed. What is it like to think that you made it that long in kind of your role, and also how did that role change for you over time? Like, did you have to adjust your game?
Oh, that's a great question, dude. Oh, absolutely. I had to adjust. Every single summer, I had to do something different, figure it out. I started stick handling in the locker room like a little ball, and all the guys would give me so much shit, and they'd be like, oh, it's so annoying. It's like the most annoying thing in the world. So I'm like, no, I got to do this. Then I'd go outside and find a little area and take a stick, and the stick handle would hit the ball off the thing and try to get my hands just to – not just toe drag, guys, but to get the damn puck off the wall, you know, to be able to get the puck and hold it and be able to just – yeah. Maneuver it enough to get the damn thing and go do my thing. And I absolutely had to adjust. I started hitting guys weird. They started cracking down on hits. I used to crush guys on back checks, right? Yep. Like when you're back checking and they try to cut to the middle and you get them there. And yeah, I started to get suspended for those. And I'm like, ooh, so you adjust your hits. You can't go high. You can't do this anymore. Like it all started changing. You had to keep your speed going. I mean, it was – damn right. I had to adjust every single year and just figure out a way to be a little bit more effective in my own little game to be able to stay in the league.
Yeah.
Huh. I know.
Now, you spent about 5 years in the lower leagues before getting up to the NHL. I mean, how much – when you're just trying to get up to the league and all, what's going through your head? Is it like it's just going to – come, or is there a part of you like, I don't know what's going to happen, maybe this ain't right for me? What goes through your head throughout these years?
Dude, my career went so fast. I didn't even know what hockey was, and all of a sudden I'm playing it, and all of a sudden I made a team, and all of a sudden I made a AAA team, and all of a sudden I had an agent, and all of a sudden I played juniors, and then I played juniors and the major juniors, and then all of a sudden I got drafted by the Devils, and now I'm playing in the NHL. Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
I knew I was going to play, and look, I never had a doubt in my mind, even when I was a kid. And my dad knows this too. And we talk every, my dad was, took me everywhere. I still live right next to him. And we never had a doubt in our head that I was going to make it. And I'd be the first one ever from St. Louis and all that stuff. And I still didn't have a doubt. Why? I don't know why I was so confident, but I didn't. And I happened all so quick. Now, anybody can make it, but to stay there, and that's the toughest part, because you just all of a sudden, I was tough enough, and I was a hitter. So Lou Lamoriello from the Devils was going to take a chance on me anyway.
Yep.
And, like, mold me into what he needed to do. He can control me and stuff like that, and I love that. Guy is so unbelievable. He is such an unbelievable hockey figure.
Yep.
And I'm so glad that they drafted me, or else who knows what would happen, because that was pretty wild. But that guy – but anyway, yeah, so that's – you know, I knew it. I never had a doubt in my mind, believe it or not.
So, yeah, speaking of Lou, a couple months back, probably a year, maybe a year and a half ago, we had Arlette come on, the national anthem, the girl who sang for the Devils, and she was telling us about how Lou discovered her singing in a little jazz cafe over by out by the Meadowland, and just asked her to come sing the national anthem. Pretty amazing story there. But
he's a remarkable man,
yeah,
in every way, and he brought me back. He drafted me.
He did.
Took a chance. And he, you know, he knew I would do anything for the team, and as a team guy, and he loved that. And that wasn't easy to deal with here and there. And he stuck by my side. And he traded me to the Blues, which helped my career so much in St. Louis now. And then he brought me back. It's just, I owe a lot to him. Like, I look at it like, honestly, like my dad took me so far, and then I was kind of on my own. But then Lou was my boss, my first boss ever. And like he just helped me become a man in a weird situation being a hockey player. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like your dad can't control you then.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you're doing your own thing, you're making money. But Lou's your boss, and having him as a boss really helped me through my immature early 20 days.
Now, that kind of segued to my next question. What was it like, you know, you went from the Devils a couple years, and then you, what was it like playing back home, like going to the Blues, a team that you said got you into hockey? What was that like going home?
Dude. Oh, my God. I mean, just being, you know, flying in, your parents, your family, your brother. I had so many people coming to games. I tried to sort tickets out. Was the biggest pain in the ass I've ever dealt with in my life, dealing with tickets. My buddies just took full advantage of everything. My family went to games, and all of a sudden they're like, okay, we can't take this anymore, because maybe one guy would say something, come on, Cam, or something, where, you know, my dad was like, okay. So I hooked him up at home. We got TiVo at the time, a big screen. He could rewind the fights and stuff. You know, it was really unbelievable, and it was a trip. It was like, it became a little too much sometimes. And, you know, I had to, at that point, you're just such a bubble. I had to get away. And, you know, the Blues, Ryan Reeves was coming up and everything. So it all worked out. Like, it's not like I could have stayed if I wanted to, but I was like, okay, time to get away from this. You're here 24/7 because I live here.
Yeah.
Everybody knows where you live. You know, it's just nonstop phone. It's just nonstop. Ask Patty Maroon about that. And they won the cup. Think about it. But it was fun, and it helped me set myself up for after hockey. But it was, you know, it was fun, but it was crazy too. To be honest with you.
You hear that a lot with athletes, like fighters fighting in their hometown, and you know they start focusing.
Yeah, I never did that. No, I never did that. Honestly, I fought a couple times. I remember one time in juniors. For the Spitfires, I was acting all hard ass, going to the bar. You know, like your first, like, you know, people are like cheering for you for the first time in your life. You're popular in town. Duh, 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 duh. You know, you're trying to impress girls. You're the tough guy. I got a black guy. So I meet up with these guys, and I was young, 17 probably. These guys are talking shit. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, let's go. And I go outside, and this dude embarrassed me so bad in front of a bunch of people. You know, I'm dead serious. It was so damn embarrassing. I'm like, oh my God. He was actually really cool at the end. He helped me up. I'm like, he just freaking embarrassed me. I'll never do that again. And all the times I went to the bars in St. Louis, believe it or not, man, and I did all the time. We went out all the damn time. I never got in any tussle, ever. I was friends with everybody. Maybe a couple dumbasses would do something stupid, but I had a bunch of people with me like, get him out of here. Like, that's it. Never fought anybody in St. Louis.
I actually meant like I hear like UFC fighters and MMA, like boxers, like when they're in their hometown, they got to take care of.
Yeah, even family. BJ that the other day. So, yeah. So it's just, that's the last thing. Why would you? How could somebody piss you off that much? You know everybody there. Yeah, why would you let that guy? Tell the guy to get his ass out of there. Make him look stupid. No, you don't have any. You don't even have to touch him. You just order somebody to do something.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. Now, if somebody's crazy and they grab your girl or something and you're forcing it something, it's like, okay, well, you know, like, Pepe Le Pew over here was grabbing, like, what do you want me to do? Like, I don't know. But there's different situations, but I never really dealt with that, to be honest with you.
We talked about with some of the guys you fought, another thing because of my being known as a big fighter, Were there reps in particular you hated playing when they're on the ice just because they're watching you extra good? They're telling you, don't you do anything, Cam.
Man, I was cool with everybody. All those, yeah, man, those refs, because you know why? I listened to them, and I kissed their ass. And even if I messed up, I'd be like, dude, my bad. Every time. Anytime a scrum in front of that, the Cam, I got, okay, all right, I got you, man. So, yeah. And then next time I kind of went high on a guy, He'd give me a warning, and I'd hit another guy awkwardly, and he'd give me a warning. I'm like, okay, because I was cool, and I listened to him, and they felt like they were in control, and I made sure that they knew that the refs were in control and the lineies were in control when I was in a scrum in front of the net. And I'd go up there, and I'd do my thing where I'd grab somebody by the throat or whatever, and I'd get a camp, and I'd be like, okay, I got you, and I'd say, come back to the guy, and I'd skate away, and they respected that, though.
Right.
They did.
Right.
So I got away with a couple of nasty ass hits.
So you, when you look back at your career over 100-something fights and you know, 15, 16 years, what led to your finally saying, I can't do this anymore? Was it your health? Was it just
no
opportunity? What was it for you?
Yeah, no, I well, there's way I had way more fights than that. That was only an NHL, dude. I probably had about 400 total. So there's a lot,
right?
And so yeah, no. But the only reason why I'm saying that is because, yeah, man, I got hit hard.
Yeah,
a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty good to be able to dodge and weave and be able to eat the punches in certain areas. And I know that sounds gruesome, but that's ask any fighter. That's what you have to do.
For sure.
You don't take it on the chin. You got to dodge and weave and eat them in the right spot. But how I left the game was actually, I got lucky, man. My transition was pretty damn smooth. Excuse me. And I think I played over in Nottingham, fought a bunch, won two championships. Last game I've ever played, I held a trophy.
Yep.
And just had an awesome time. And I love England, and I love the Brits. And we partied, and we had fun, and looked at castles, and I love that kind of shit anyway. So it was really cool. But the reason why I retired, because I signed another two-year deal with them, is because I got radio offers back in St. Louis, and I was basically playing at the time to kind of figure out what I want to do afterwards, and it all worked out.
Yeah.
Well, I got lucky, though. It's not the case for a lot of guys, man. I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, let's jump right into that. When you alluded to it before. You were setting yourself up for post-career and things outside of hockey. I know you're very active with radio and things like that, and you're very entertaining Twitter feed. That's kind of how I actually even hooked up with you. What did you say? What are you doing now that the game is over, and what are you up to?
Well, I got my own radio show every single day, if I'm not a fan, from 12 to 1. I'm starting a podcast with Andy Strickland. I don't know if you know Andy. He works at Fox Sports. He's been covering the Blues for like 20 years, friend of mine, very smart, a little nerdy, but then it works back and forth because we chirp each other, which is great.
Yep.
I work for I go on TV and do Blues pre- and post-game stuff. I do this, I do that. I do stuff with alumni. I shake hands and kiss babies. You know, I just do a lot of stuff. And
yeah.
So, but the reason why I'm able to do that, because I played here. You know, right. You know, if I played at my hometown and I was here for 4 years and everybody's face, and anytime the Blues wanted me to do something, like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, Cam, can you do this? Yeah, I'll do it. Anytime people at home wanted me to do it, I just did everything, not knowing that it would help me in my future just because I just wanted to do it. You know, like, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. Let me, you know, try to do as much stuff as possible.
Yep.
And it all worked out.
So why don't you tell us a little bit? I mean, obviously, the great thing about this last year with the Blues winning the title, being a kid who grew up in St. Louis, for what I've heard in interviews, that St. Louis, the Blues weren't as big when you were growing up. I mean, how's that transition, even add to it how you weren't able to raise a cup as a player? Did it just all come together with emotions, or how did that work out for the community and everything, how that came together?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me, dude? You see what these guys did, man? They partied so hard and took that damn cup everywhere, and they showed it to everybody in this town, and it's still making its rounds in this town. And the ownership group of this town set up kids and so many things. They went above and beyond to present this trophy and to the community, this community that desperately needs a lot of positivity around it. Don't get me wrong. A organization that desperately needed a championship, and it all happened. And the way it happens is it's a storybook, and the community is thriving, and they are so Blues crazy right now. And the Cardinals are great. And like, we have an MLS team coming in now and saying, like, yep. So it's all coming together. But hockey has never been bigger. Oh, kids are playing everywhere. Do we have – they just built this four-sheet, $100 million – well, hundreds of millions of dollars sheet for the Blues, for the AAA Blues, for the Blues alumni. They have our locker room so like this. It's just the most high-tech, innovative hockey rink probably in the world. I would say one of them. And they just built a couple of these bad boys in St. Louis because of all the hockey hunger that's going on. Sick. It's just crazy, man. It's awesome. That's what the Cardinals, the Blues, they do so much for this town, and they keep it going. They keep it going, and they thrive off it. It's unbelievable.
That's awesome.
Did you get a date with the cup, out of curiosity?
Dude, I party with that damn thing. I don't get a date with it, dude. What do I – no, I don't get a date with it. But I party. I got invited to a lot of parties, and we partied so hard. Patty Maroon's party was awesome. We had all –
all the Oakville boys out there, you know, all the good old boys from St. Louis that you grew up with. And we just, I'll tell you one thing about that party. It was so fun. Ryan O'Reilly was there, and we just had, I remember sitting on the, we're just at this like private lake in this ranch in the middle of nowhere. Beautiful. I mean, just unbelievable place with this private lake. We're looking, Kate and I are just sitting there. Sun was going down. The moon was up, sparkling over the water. We're sitting there with a couple of cocktails with our feet in the water. The Stanley Cup's up on the hill, the light shining down on a Stanley Cup right over the water glowing. And we just look at each other like, oh my God, where are we right now? This is like the coolest damn thing in the world. Like those kind of moments that you'll never forget. That was happened plenty of times this summer, dude.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's crazy.
I have a comic friend of mine that I work with. I don't know. His dad played with the Blues somewhere along the line. He posted like a couple months ago him drinking out of the cup. It's just a small world.
I know, man. Well, the hockey community is tight in this town.
Yeah, yeah.
So everybody wants to take care of each other, you know?
Hey, do you ever as you got towards the end of your career, and like I said, like we said, the role that you had, do you ever, did you have did any fear start to develop over the years, or more thinking
fear?
About it?
I had some weird times. I don't want to get too far into it, but yeah, and I'm actually open about it, but I went through some tough times with a lot of different things. But nothing bad, man. I lived a fantasy life, so don't. Everything I did, I put on myself. I mean, we had so much fun.
Right.
So much fun. And like, you know, your buddies are involved in everything with you. You know, you're taking care of everybody. No one was making money at the time when I was young doing it. And you're playing, and you just want to take care of all your buddies. So you live and learn through a lot of different things. But as far as, like, fighting and stuff, like, God, at the end, yeah, sometimes you had to force it, you know, like, suck it up. Like, oh, I feel like shit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I might even have a flu. Like, oh, imagine having a flu and having to get riled up in front of your teammates because they're all looking at you like, what's up, Cam? You get going. Let's go, baby. Especially when you got to sit down in the minors, which we're younger kids, and I'm playing for Albany, and I got to get up for these fights. And they're like,
yeah.
And I'm fighting just straight up shit kickers over there. Like, there's like Trevor Gillies and guys like that. You're like, ooh. Like, all right, damn. Like, I gotta get up. All the boys, young kids are looking at me. I'm like, damn, get up, Cam. Get up. You gotta look yourself in the mirror and be like, get up for this one. Yeah. So, yeah, it took a lot out of you, dude. No shit.
I'm sure, man. Do you look back on your career, like, do you have any regrets? Or do you look at it, like, as it's your life story?
Oh, dude, that's my life story, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Are you kidding? No, dude, everything, no. I mean, there's a couple things where you're like, oh, boy. But, you know, but overall, it's like, no, I did it. I did what I did, and I learned a lot. And, you know, I lived an awesome life. Still do. Still do big time from it. Oh, my God, yeah. Kate and I, we, you know, I had a girl that stuck by me through a lot of it and had to, like, really, you know, had to turn a 180 in my life, you know, and I went, which was just, was great, and she stuck by my side for a long time through a lot of weird, crazy stress. And I'm in a good spot here, man. I really am, and my head's okay, and that's a big deal.
I love it, Cam. I want to thank you for coming on. You, I can still tell the, you know, through the way you speak and the how much you love the game and how much you appreciate what it's given you, whatnot. And just, let me tell you, as a Devil fan, it was a pleasure watching you for years and years and years, and a lot of good times with you on some of those third and fourth lines and doing your job, and just really cool to get to talk to you now coming full circle.
Mostly fourth line, but yeah, no, I appreciate that. Third line, maybe in preseason. But yeah, no, man. We have good friends out in Jersey too that we love to go out there. I saw a Devils game out there this year and said hey to people and went out, and I think I put on like 15 pounds because I went to all of my old watering holes and ate a bunch of food. I missed the food too much, man. So appreciate you guys having me on, man, anytime.
So, Mike, do you still think you could take him?
I mean, maybe I'll tweet at him when he comments on the podcast. I could take you and pray that I don't list where I live in Twitter, but
you start find your old Jersey address, start shaking down the apartment complex.
Well, I do still have the old Thrashers goalie helmet, so I can't wear that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
Well, I'm a little depressed that you don't wear that weekly anymore during the cast, you know, like you did for that month straight where we couldn't get you out of it.
Well, my parents talked me down. They said, it's okay. You can do this podcast thing without getting injured. And then I took the helmet off and I stubbed my toe. Then I put the helmet on for another 3 months. But we're all good now.
Good.
I'm big and brave, and I'm going to tell Cam Jansen what he can do with that puck, you know?
One and only Cam Jansen. That was fun. All right. Brother, what do you got?
Okay. Well, I mean, I guess I'll bring up the new addition.
You joined New Edition?
To my family. What's up?
You joined the R&B band, New Edition?
Yeah. You know, they heard my smooth vocal cords, and they said, we got to bring this kid on tour. And
Naturally.
You know, we're going around the world. You know, this is my last night. I mean, this is how I wanted to say goodbye to everybody. So,
let's see if New Edition is still touring. New Edition tour. They were touring with Bell Biv DeVoe.
I wish they would have discovered me earlier, man. That would have been awesome.
You, Bell Biv DeVoe, New Edition. It sounds great.
But I'm not sure if you saw some of the pictures. I got a brand new car into my life right now.
Brand new wheels. Well, you had your old wheels for quite a while.
I had them for a good 8 years. I was still on the fence with the car. Basically, I brought in the shop for some brake stuff, and I got a quote. It was a little high. I'm like, do I really want to invest all that into something that is literally on death's door? So chatted over with the wife, and we decided to go out some car shopping. Had an interesting experience. Like, I went out with my dad because he's a good wheeler and dealer. So, he's bought like 26 cars in his life. So, he knows,
what 26.
To do with that stuff.
That's experience right there.
So, we were on this one lot looking over some stuff. Like, initially, I was thinking about maybe getting a truck, but I couldn't get the numbers down low enough, so I thought nothing of it. So the guy's like, well, I'm going to show you guys some sedans. And we looked at a couple, and they were all right. He's like, no, we're going to – let me take you over here to look at these other cars.
I hope
and the
this
guy sto- drove I hope, us.
I hope the story ends the with guy, you leaving with a monster truck.
But the guy drove us like – 8 miles away, and I could literally tell he was driving me away just to get me away from my dad because he's the one asking all the questions.
Ah.
He was trying to do a bait and switch kind of deal, but it was just hilarious. He's like, oh, I got to show you this one, and we're like gone. Like, there is no, I'm just going to walk back to my parents. It was literally, man, I got to get an Uber if I want to go back to my car.
Jeez.
He was playing some sweet kind of games with me. He's like, I know this don't look great, but I mean, but he's just listing out all the stuff and then playing the deal. It's like, yeah, I know you can't afford it, but if you go to 9 years, then the payments are right there.
I have a similar thing. A couple of weeks ago, I went and I was test driving. Like, I just actually wanted to go see the new Jeep Gladiator. I really love the look of them. It's like a car that is perfect for me. And I was like, I'm not really serious about going to get it. I just kind of wanted to actually see the truck and see the inside of it. And maybe like in a year or so, I'd be ready to go. And they are just savages, man. They do not want you to leave at all. Exactly. Same thing. Well, you know, like, where do you want to be? What do you want to pay? And they just extend the years. And even the guy's like, I'm like, look, I can't afford it. I just really kind of wanted to see what the ballpark price was and kind of get an idea. And he's like, all right, hold on. Let me go get your keys because we test drove it. And he's like, he's like, well, and he's taking a while with my keys. I'm like, oh, God, here we go. He's taking a while. He's like, hey, so I just went in the back and let's just say he said, oh, and Brad from Chrysler is here. And he's only here like once a month, so this could be a good thing. And, you know, sometimes he's able to make some things happen. Hold on a second. We'll get Brad to come over. And, of course, another Tim and guy comes over, and he's like, hey, you know, like, I'm not here very often. It was so, like, so, such an act.
So scripted.
Yeah, I'm not here
like, very often. I just imagine the real-world scenario where, like, some guy's trying, you know, bargain with somebody. It's like, oh, crap, Brad's here. Every time Brad's here, bargains come with him.
It's just, you just see right through him. So, like, I had a bad experience with buying a car years back, and I kind of learned my lesson back then. But, oh my God, they are just such dogs, man. They do not want you to leave. They'll do anything to try to get you in something before you leave that showroom.
Yeah, like, before I went out that Saturday, Izzy came to pick me up, and we went to a small dealership. Like, I think it was Toyota or whatever. I was looking at their trucks, and like, I'm parked where the trucks are, which is like on the other side of the dealership.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm parking between some trucks, and I'm looking around. Like, literally, I hear like a tire screech, and a guy just runs out. Just a come up to me. Hey, here's my car. What are you looking at? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you up to? What is that? You want to come with me? We can talk about some stuff. Where you go?
It's too intense. I shut down. I start going like, I'm gonna go. Like anything. Like in stores where they're like, can I help you, sir? Can I help you? What can I help you with today? It's like, oh my God, furniture places are bad like that too sometimes.
So. I think more stores should be like that. There should be grocery stores like, can I interest you in a cantaloupe? I mean, they're pretty healthy. I mean, I can give you a sweet deal. I know that ShopRite thing says 2 for $5, but let me tell you something. Bob is here. He's usually not here in the grocery section. I'll tell you that much. I'm thinking it might be 2 for $4.50. You know, I mean, it's a little off of my commission, but hey, if you get them cantaloupes right now, Bob is going to give you a sweet deal.
We're just looking for happy customers here at ShopRite. Just looking for him. But it's funny. We're going like in one way in certain businesses, we're going where everything's automated and you self-checkout and and then you got businesses like car dealerships. It's like still people just driving things into your head. I'd rather be able to go on the computer. Boop, 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 boop. This is your numbers. This is what you can pay. These are your options. And like get a ballpark first and then talk to somebody. Like it's just too intense sometimes. I almost want to just like continue driving my truck until the wheels fall off.
Well, that's what I mostly do, but I guess when I need brakes on my car, it's like, I need them for some reason.
You don't need brakes.
I'm guessing I can just swerve around everybody and pray for green lights all the way.
So what did you end up with?
I ended up with a Honda CR-V.
Ah.
You know, it's nice quality little car, good mileage, you know, good space in the back. Perfect for the 40-year-old on a podcast, you know? Perfect description. Like, the most thrilling thing is like, ooh, it's a pearl white.
Ooh. Well,
I didn't want the regular white. I said, no. You're dealing with Mikey P here. Go with the pearl.
Listen, Mikey's 40. He could splurge a little bit. Give me the pearl. Get the pearl.
What a nice racing stripe on my Honda CR-V, so everybody knows don't mess with me.
And a big wing, a big spoiler on the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, all right, cool, man. Well, good luck with your car. Good luck with your car. I think it's time to get the hell out of here. What do you say?
Yeah, I think so. I think we gave quality entertainment for everybody listening, and if not, you know, we'll try again next week, I guess.
Well, if not, we'll try next week or the week after that or, you know, whenever we put the next episode out.
Round 450, I think we're going to get into our niche.
Well, I'm looking at the next week or two. We got a couple guests lined up, so that means we have to at least interview them. So that might push us to put more episodes out. We'll see. But, Berlo, anything to promote?
Just promote it since we're almost here in October. My site on Facebook, Michael Berlew Random Stuff. We will be getting pumpkin spice, whatever. I just placed my order on Walmart.com. I'm getting some pumpkin spice spam coming my way, so you know the fun's about to begin there, October 1st, everybody. So
now,
it's on Facebook.com/TheBurls721.
Here's the real challenge. Not tasting the pumpkin spice spam, having pumpkin spice spam sandwiches for a month straight for lunch. Now that would be quite a feat.
Well, let's just say maybe you'll see the spam more than once this coming October. Just all right. Throwing it out there.
All right. And I'm going to promote a fellow podcast. I was actually on it last week, so I was waiting to kind of share this. I know I had said it before, but I was on the American Loser podcast, which is a good friend of mine, KP Burke, and I did an episode. I didn't want to spoil it last time, so I did an episode on Nikola Tesla. It was a lot of fun. We were kind of crushed for time, but it was cool going down to the Shared Universe Studios where Mike and Ming from Comic Book Men do their thing, and it's just a great podcast. So go back. I think it was two episodes ago now by the time this comes out, and check out the episode on Tesla and the War of the Currents. We had a good time, and it's a good podcast. I'm also going to release it on our platform just for our listeners, too. So I will do a little speech at the beginning just so you know it's us. It's through us, and it's not just KP suddenly taking over Verbal Shenanigans also. But I'll release it on our end, too, so you guys could check that podcast out. It's American Loser. Very good podcast. So, guys, with that, that's it. Want to thank our guest, and I guess that's it, and we move forward, and that's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Peace.
Later.